This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Nicola Coughlan, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Youngest Heroes. Rebellion, risk, and the radical power of youth.
She thought, right, I'll just do it. She thought about others rather than herself.
12 stories of extraordinary young people from across history.
There's a real sense of urgency in them, that resistance has to be mounted, it has to be mounted now.
Follow History's Youngest Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
Richtig spannend, richtig vielfältig. Das ist deine Karriere bei Kaufland. Ob Trainee-Programm, Direkteinstieg, Studentenjob oder Praktikum. Finde bei uns den Einstieg, der zu dir passt. Profitiere von einer attraktiven Vergütung, spannenden Aufgaben und individuellen Entwicklungsmöglichkeiten. Werde jetzt Teil unseres Teams. Bewirb dich jetzt unter kaufland.de/studenten. Kaufland, hier bin ich richtig.
Welcome to Assignment from the BBC World Service. It's late at the Gambia's international airport. Most here are waiting for the arrival of tourists from Europe who flock to this tiny nation in West Africa for its beautiful beaches and winter sun. But just after 2 o'clock in the morning, a special group of arrivals appear, walking single file in silence out of the terminal. They're dozens of Gambian migrants who are trying to reach Europe without visas, but whose journey came to an end in Tunisia before they could cross the Mediterranean, and have now been returned home. They are all young men. There's 47 of them. They're not carrying much. There's perhaps just a small holdall. It seems to be all they have left from a journey that probably cost a lot and for which they risked their lives. They are actually being handed a small white cloth bag. I think it contains blanket and some essential items. And they've been given them by a team from the United Nations. Hello, sir. Tell us your name.
My name is Lahadi Fai. I am 20 years old.
20 years old. How do you feel about being back home?
Right now, just thanking God. Alhamdulillah, here is our homeland, my homeland. Right now, I'm very happy. Thanking God to be here right now.
Why did you come back?
Because we are living in a country where they don't totally like migrants like us. Tunisia is not a safe country for any black people.
The EU is supporting countries in North Africa to clamp down on irregular migration. Thousands of migrants now feel they have no choice but to return home to countries across Africa. In the past year, the UN has helped more than 3,000 come back to the Gambia, and that's a big deal for a country of just 2 million. So what actually happens to the migrants who've had to come home? Will they stay? And what impact does this cycle of exodus and return have on this Africa's smallest nation? I'm Alex Last. And this is the documentary. Hello.
Yes.
How do you pray?
Good morning.
Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Nice to see you, man. It's just been a couple of days since we met Alhaji at the airport. His mum lives far out in the sticks, so for now he's staying at a friend's family compound nearer the capital. We sit outside in the earthen courtyard while a boy starts the elaborate process of making traditional sweet mint tea. Alhaji's tall, though he looks young in T-shirt and tracksuit bottoms. He's gentle, welcoming, but he doesn't smile easily.
We don't want to come back. We don't want to need to come back. That's not our aim. Our aim is to enter to Europe. Like, we want to help family. Some people might be even say that this is a suicide mission. But, you know, poverty can make you to do anything.
To understand why he came back, you need to hear what happened on his perilous odyssey, an experience familiar to thousands of migrants, some who fled war, some who fled poverty from across the continent.
A lot of people lost their life. Yeah. Like my mom, she always told me that, come back, come back, come back, come back. Don't kill yourself, don't kill yourself.
Alhaji grew up in the countryside. His father, a groundnut farmer, died when he was young. He couldn't afford to finish school or go on to higher education, so 2 years ago, at the age of 18, without telling his mum, he set out to reach Europe with his best friend.
You are seeing your friends that are in Europe, that are helping their families, so you are sitting in this country doing nothing. Like, let me also go this way, because this way is the only way that I can help my family.
They didn't have visas, so they took what is known locally as the back way. They chose the land route to North Africa, hoping to get a boat from Tunisia across the Mediterranean. It means a dangerous journey across the Sahara. Migrants pay traffickers hundreds, sometimes thousands of dollars to get them through. But they're preyed on by security forces, rebel groups, even the traffickers themselves. Many don't make it. Women are particularly at risk.
Like in desert, when they are transporting you guys, in desert, at night time, they will say, all of you get down. It is time for rest. Mans, go this way. Boys, go this way. Then they will come and collect the girls. They took them away. So some people get pregnant through that.
And nearer the coast, they're not safe either. The EU gives aid to North African countries like Tunisia and Libya to keep migrants from crossing the Mediterranean. But there have been widespread accounts of police raids on African migrant shelters, arbitrary detentions, stories of torture and abuse. Alhaji says if migrants can't bribe their way out, they can be deported to neighbouring countries or simply dumped by the border in the middle of the desert.
Police, they know that there are people in this house. So, you know, no one wants police to catch you. So people start trying to jump. Even me, I jumped there. I got wounded. Some people there, hands break, some people legs, some serious wound.
Trying to escape.
Trying to escape. Sometimes they even came throwing the tear gases, burning our house. There was a time when police, they even wanted to throw us to the desert. But alhamdulillah, I escaped.
They wanted to drive you to the desert and leave you.
Yeah.
In Tunisia, says Alhaji, there's hostility too from some locals, forcing African migrants to live out in the open, outside of town, sheltering under plastic sheets. They're plagued by mosquitoes and lice. Many get sick. He shows me his arms, covered in scabs.
The water also that we drink, no, totally it is not good.
Makes you sick?
Yep. I have marks.
You have rashes?
I have a lot of them now. And they won't allow you to go to their hospital. No matter how you explain your problem to them, they won't care. They will be saying, Tunisia is not for black people. Go back to where you come from.
If they have enough, they pay smugglers to get a small boat across the Mediterranean. The boats are packed. Some don't make it. Alhaji set off twice, wearing strips of car tyres to act as a makeshift life jacket.
We went together 2 times in a sea, the same boat, but we couldn't succeed.
The police, the Navy intercepted
yeah,
you?
Yeah, police, Navy, National Guard. They just took our engine away.
They took away the boat's engine?
They took the engine and left us inside the sea.
They left you just adrift in
just
the sea?
Just like that. But we even saw that to them, like, we have a pregnant woman, please, can you help us to get out? They said no. So we try our best to get out from the water. But we spend a lot of hours, more than 5 hours, 6 hours, we are inside the sea. Some people went inside the water to push the boat with the swimming. You will be swimming and trying to help others that are inside the boat. That's how we manage it to get out from the sea. But it was very difficult for us. That happened 2 times to me inside
Twice.
The water. Twice inside the water.
And both times they took the engine?
Yeah. Then after that they are going to tell you, Kulumut, all of you died there, you don't care, like.
So the word they use is kulumut.
Yeah.
And that means all of you are going to die.
Yeah.
Tunisia, like other North African countries, denies it mistreats migrants. The EU has said it wouldn't support such activities. For Alhaji, it was his final attempt to cross. He and his best friend eventually agreed to come home on a flight organised by the UN's International Organisation for Migration, the IOM. Now he says for the first time in 2 years, he can sleep without fear.
You're 20 now, but you began this journey when you were 18.
Yep, so.
That's a lot to go through at your age. You know, you're a young man. It's a lot to experience.
Like, I was a student, bro. I left this country. All I want is learning. It is not easy. It is not easy at all.
What makes people endure so much to leave? The Gambia is a democracy, tourism a big industry, but like many other African nations, most of the population is young. Competition for work is fierce, jobs don't pay much. In part, the exodus is about expectation, but it's about a profound sense of duty too. Many families rely on money sent home by relatives abroad. Here in the Gambia, remittances are equivalent to at least 20% of the country's GDP. Even a little money sent back goes a long way. Having a relative make it to Europe can be life-changing. To try to get there, many have sold what little they had or borrowed from family and friends. To come back empty-handed is devastating. So there are assistance programs funded by the EU and run by the IOM to help people return and reintegrate. In a small craft market in the tourist part of the old town of Bakau, I meet Usman. He's a returnee and a beneficiary of the IOM's support.
Oh, wow. This is my wall.
He mans a little stall displaying wood carvings. In front, it's adorned with colourful dresses and bright shirts in African prints.
Yeah, and on the table in front of us...
This is my sewing machine.
It's a beautiful sewing machine. I mean, it's black and it's painted. Is it? And it's operated by the foot pedal. It's like an old Singer.
Yeah, it's a Singer.
It's a Singer.
Singer machine, yeah. I can do tie and dye. I can do batik. I can sew both the European dress and Africans.
And you took the back way?
Back way, yeah. I went up to Libya. I was there in 4 years.
4 years?
4 years,
so
yeah.
So you left Gambia and you were away for four years?
For 4 years, yeah.
Wow. And did you get any assistance for coming back?
The time we come here, the IOM give us sponsoring for us to do our business, but they don't give us cash flow.
So instead, the returnees are told to identify what they need for their business, and if it's within budget, the IOM will pay the suppliers directly.
So for me, I get lucky, I get 3 machines there.
And how has business been after you return?
After my return. The business is not good because still I'm working for people. I am not working for myself. Right now, we don't have many tourists. Yeah, the business is very slow right now. I don't have no choice. Anyway, I have space to work. I try to work to sponsor my family. Yeah.
Are you not tempted to try again?
To Libya?
Yeah,
no.
or via
back
the boat?
Way.
Yeah.
No. It's not my concept now. Because before, I don't experience it. But what I see there, I would rather die here.
You're listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
I'm Nicola Coughlin, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Youngest Heroes. Rebellion, risk, and the radical power of youth.
She thought, right, I'll just do it. She thought about others rather than herself.
12 stories of extraordinary young people from across history.
There's a real sense of urgency in them, that resistance has to be mounted, it has to be mounted now.
Follow History's Youngest Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
Richtig spannend, richtig vielfältig. Das ist deine Karriere bei Kaufland. Ob Trainee-Programm, Direkteinstieg, Studentenjob oder Praktikum. Finde bei uns den Einstieg, der zu dir passt. Profitiere von einer attraktiven Vergütung, spannenden Aufgaben und individuellen Entwicklungsmöglichkeiten. Werde jetzt Teil unseres Teams. Bewirb dich jetzt unter kaufland.de/studenten. Kaufland, hier bin ich richtig. My family, what I was, so
wrong, so missing. Travel go back way, it's not easy. Here in the Gambia, there are local groups that are trying to persuade young people not to embark on the perilous journey to Europe. The the back way. One of them is called Youth Against Irregular Migration. One of their founders even wrote a song about it while stuck in a Libyan prison.
So he was talking about the journey and then how suffering that young people go through this journey.
Tijan and Tom Bong, two of the group's leaders, show me the song on their phones as we sit in the shade of a tree outside their small office. Most of the group are returnees from Libya, where amid the civil war, conditions for migrants could be particularly brutal.
For me, in the Gambia here, I never had gunfire. But in Libya, when we enter in Libya, every day you will hear gunfire.
They all have horror stories. Tijan is still haunted by what happened to one fellow Gambian migrant who tried to stop a woman in their group from being raped by Libyan traffickers.
One guy took his gun and then knocked him behind. Then the guy lost conscious. Then they pulled fuel inside our car. They poured that fuel on top of that guy and they set him fire. So the guy shout until he died.
So they beat him with the gun. They took petrol from your vehicle, poured it over him and set him on fire and killed him.
Yes. Then they told us, you see what we did to this guy. If anyone who misbehaved, we will do the same thing to him. So the lady came out and he said, I don't want no one to die on behalf of me. So let them do what they feel like doing to me. So
back in the Gambia, they tell such stories to warn others not to go.
Using this journey is, you know, you're subject to human rights violation, you know, torture, kidnapping, rape, and you know, even death. So we encourage them that if they want to migrate, if they want to travel, let them use the right channel with the right document that will access them to travel with their dignity and then the respect to the destination that they want to go.
And the group also looks to help those who've come back, offering counselling for returnees.
First thing that we need as reintegration is our mental, you know, state, because we've been traumatized. And then still now some are living with that trauma. We give psychosocial support to one another. If you have stress home, you come here, we talk to one another, at least feel like you are not alone in the stress.
The IOM says it does offer psychological as well as the financial support. But returnees say few understand what they've been through and it's not enough. Assistance needs to be long-term.
Of course, it's like €1,000, which is amounted to $60,000 here. And in the manner that the reintegration was given at the time, it's not helpful to us.
Why
because
not?
We need to have our stable mind to figure out what you want to do with that money. But I cannot come with that trauma. You expect me to have $60,000 in my hand. You know, ask me next morning. I will not know where I put that money. Also, like families, they will sell their last asset for you to go to this journey. So if you are given that $60,000, you cannot recover or repair the loss that the family have, you know, through this journey.
Even with assistance, some struggle to find their place in the society they'd left behind.
I feel embarrassment because I see myself like I'm a failure because my family lose a lot of money on me to go there and succeed.
Was this just an internal feeling or did other members of the community make you feel like a failure?
Yeah, some of us, even the community, they will just point their finger on you. He's afraid to cross or he's an afraid guy or he's a failure guy. Especially the women that embark this irregular migration. Some of them, it is very hard them to get man to marry. Because obviously they'll just point their fingers that they have already used them.
That they've been raped.
They have been raped, yeah, exactly.
At night, we visit a family's compound in a poorer neighbourhood. The electricity's out, so people are sitting outside their homes in the dark, only their faces illuminated as they watch videos on their phones.
My name is Aisha Tunjai. I am 30 years old.
Aisha's one of an increasing number of women who've been taking the back way. She tried to make it to Europe, this time using the other main route, by boat, braving the Atlantic Ocean up the West African coast. But that too is very dangerous. Aisha was lucky. Her boat turned back when they ran out of fuel in rough seas.
we spent 4 days in the water.
4 days at sea?
Yeah, 4 days in the sea. It's a terrible experience. I vomit a lot, and then they just decided we have to go back because the sea was not normal.
Women, like Aisha, also face economic pressure in the Gambia. She comes from a family of daughters and feels the same burden, the same desire to support her parents as the boys do.
When I was in that boat, like, we are more like more than 20 women in that boat.
Yeah. Really?
Yes. Young ones. Like, I saw age of 12 years in the same boat.
Traditionally, it was always young men who were taking the back way. I don't understand your situation. You know, you are among sisters, you feel a responsibility. But why do you think other young women are also taking the risk?
The same thing. As me, just to make it in life. Everybody wants to make it. So we believe that there's nothing here in the Gambia. Mm. So that's why we choose this route. We eat from hand to mouth.
Do future husbands, do they think it's a good thing?
No, they don't. Especially me, my boyfriend didn't know nothing about this one. And then still I didn't tell him anything.
Your boyfriend, you didn't tell him?
No, and I'm not planning to tell him because I know he will not be happy with it.
Why do you think he wouldn't want you to?
No, you won't know. He never like it.
Is that because he thinks, your boyfriend thinks it's too dangerous?
Too dangerous, and then he thinks it makes no sense to him.
He thinks it makes no sense?
It makes no sense risking your life like that.
Aisha came home, but what she didn't know was that in the meantime, her little sister had secretly been making her own plans.
My sister, this time, I not knowing that she planned it already with her friends. So they went on this journey. Unfortunately, they could not make it. The boat is missing. Whether it sinks or anything happened to it, we don't know. This is almost now, almost 4 months, we had nothing from them. So we decided to do the funeral.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And what was her name, your sister?
Sona.
Sona.
Yeah.
Her body is still not being found. Aisha has given up hope of ever finding her sister, her favourite sister. And they're not alone. On the same street that night, we met parents grieving their son, also lost at sea. And next door to them, another family said they'd lost 9 relatives when a boat disappeared somewhere in the Atlantic, trying to reach Europe.
This place is called Bacau.
That's Frederick, a local journalist we're working with.
This is the landing place for fishermen, many of whom have now turned themselves into pilots with these boats taking would-be migrants to Europe.
It's a dangerous journey.
Very dangerous journey.
In front of me, there are dozens of traditional fishing canoes. They're about 10 to 20 metres long. Some are fitted with outboard motors, and they're all painted in beautiful, bright colours, red, blue, yellow and green, and they're festooned with flags on their prows. Some of these boats risk the perilous journey all the way around the West African Atlantic coast, up to the Spanish Canary Islands, or some even try to reach mainland Spain itself.
Just about a month ago, one of such canoes left here with about 250 people on board, and it disappeared. We've got echoes that it capsized in the sea and that everybody died.
With backing from the EU, the Gambian authorities are trying to clamp down. They patrol the coastline to stop would-be migrants. But still, despite all the warnings, the campaigns, there are people desperate to go. It's not known how many leave each year, but everywhere we went, people knew of someone who had taken the back way. In the Bacau fish market, we bumped into a recent returnee.
Yeah, I'll try again, I'll go. When I see a road, I'll go. Yeah, I'll try again, I'll never give up.
If my friend called me and told me that, yo, I'm in Spain right now, I get mad. What I'm going to say? I'm going to say, bro, I'm also going if I have the chance. You see, that's the mentality, that's the problem right now.
Desperation or optimism makes some disbelieve the horror stories, makes others think they'll be the lucky one. But for returnees like Alhaji Fai, who've been away for years, who've seen the worst of it, it's perhaps a different story. 4 days after we met him at the airport, Alhaji is a little anxious. He's waiting to see his mum. She's got a bus in from the countryside and is due any moment. It'll be the first time they've seen each other in 2 years.
I feel so excited because it has been a while. So I'm going to be very glad for that, to see my mom today.
She wraps him in her arms and won't let go.
When she saw the son, she said, "My father is here." She named Alhaji after her own father. And then she started crying, saying, "You know, I'm thanking God, I'm thanking God." So she's praising God that he brought back the son alive. So she's saying that since Alhaji left, it was hardship for her because she has to find means to help him. That is, she would go and borrow money from people because she's poor. At some point, when Alhaji was not there, she would sit in her room, cry, 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 and then drink water, get out, and she would not like people to know that she's suffering. So she says when she heard that Alhaji is back, she really suffered internally. Not that because she wasted resources, but she would wish, you know, the ambition Alhaji had was fulfilled.
Has he changed at all?
He used to be a stronger man.
She looks worried by the scars on his arms. But for Alhaji, the deepest wound is that he knows that he and his family are now worse off than when he left.
Alhaji, how are you?
Good. Just off the boat. I finally meet her now. I'm so glad I meet her. What's making me cry is that this was not my aim. This is not an aim. I don't want to go and come back with empty handed. That's what made me cry more. I'm very sad.
But now he is home and safe. His mum insists there is hope for the future.
He says Alhaji did not have an easy life. So her own hope for Alhaji is Alhaji to find here what he was trying to go for when he used the back way.
And that's the thing. For people to stay, creating opportunities at home is key. But it's hard to do overnight and the lure of Europe remains strong. For the Gambia, determined, ambitious young people like Alhaji are a valuable resource. So the question is, where does he see his future?
I would like to go back to school. I like learning. I want to be a learning man, but what worries me is that how can I help myself? How can I help my family?
Do you think he might try again at some future time?
Some future time this way? I don't think so. I don't think so. No. A lot of people lost their life, but alhamdulillah, I'm still alive.
This episode of the documentary was presented by me, Alex Last. The producer was Ellie House. The sound mix was by David Crackles, and the production coordinator was Gemma Ashman. The series editor is Penny Murphy.
Hello, I'm Katia Adler, host of the Global Story podcast from the BBC. Each weekday, we break down one big news story with fresh perspectives from journalists around the world. From artificial intelligence to divisive politics tearing our societies apart, from the movements of money and markets to the human stories that touch our lives, we bring you in-depth insights from across the BBC and beyond. Listen to the Global Story wherever you get your BBC podcasts.